our officials, our guests from the media. It's about, we are running now 4 minutes late. We were supposed to have started at 10. I suppose our presenters are here, and I suggest that we should start with the process for today. I just have some few remarks to make, that we would like to welcome our presenters to Parliament. Today we will bend slightly the rules of Parliament, because naturally, normally when we are in Parliament, parliamentarians will speak. But today, we'll allow our guests to speak, and parliamentarians will do the listening. Presenters are given 10 minutes to present. The question before us is it desirable for us to amend the Constitution in order to effect expropriation of land for public use without compensation or not? Presenters who will be presenting will be attempting to give us the answer to the question before us. On the side of the members, our role today is to listen to the presentations. It is not to agree or to disagree with what is being presented, but to attentively listen to what is being presented. Where there needs be, there will be a chance for clarity-seeking questions. And clarity-seeking questions will not be arguments. It will be clarity-seeking questions. And I will make a determination whether this is a clarity-seeking question or an argument, and I rule as such. On the side of the presenters, you are given 10 minutes and then later on to respond to clarity-seeking questions. The chance to respond to clarity-seeking questions is not an opportunity to make further arguments and presentations. If you are unable to complete your presentation in 10 minutes, the clarity-seeking question time is not an opportunity for you to continue with your presentation, but it's an opportunity to respond to the clarity-seeking questions. I suppose you are at one. Yes. The program is before us, members. We have an apology here from Honorable Carter, who is off sick. So far, that's the only apology that we are having. Oh, can we have other apologies? Honorable Kweli?
Thanks, Chair. Our Deputy President, Floyd Shivambo. Thank you. And President Julius Malema is on the Pan-African Parliament in Rwanda. Thank you.
Any other apologies? Honorable...
Thank you, Chair. I won't be long in the committee this morning, due to some in engagements in the House this afternoon. Yes, so I'll have to clip them.
Thank you. I want to apologize for Dr. Lutridge. She will be coming, but she'll be late.
No, Chief, thank you. I also indicated to you earlier that I'll be in and out. I mean, no disrespect to any of the presenters if I'm not here, due to other commitments with the Minister of Finance later today. Thank you, Chair, and in the House. Thank you.
Thank you very much. According to the program, the first presenter will be Dr. V. Mahlatsi. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. Mahlatsi, yes, from AFASA.
Honorable Chairperson, honorable members, and also the guests who are and presenters who are here, on behalf of the African Farmers Association of South Africa, AFASA, I would really like to greet you and thank you for the opportunity for AFASA to be given to come and present here. I am the president of the African Farmers Association, AFASA. I am here with me with one of the members representing the Commodity Association, which is a member of AFASA, the deputy chairperson of the commodity, which is sugar, under the organization SAFTA from in South Africa. So we are both here. The name of the deputy chairperson is Ms. Lindiwe Shubi, and the two of us will be representing, and she'll be assisting with the questions as well of clarity. So just in terms of time, mine is basically to come and clarify our position as AFASA as far as the land issue is concerned. We as AFASA started the process of the land long before the discussion of expropriation without compensation, which has been started by this House. I'm raising this issue because what we are basically presenting comes from a very long process that was specifically focusing at district level with engagement and dialogue prior to 2016. And in October 2016, we took a memorandum of understanding of issues to the then President Zuma at the Union Building. And the issues that I'm going to raise here, they were specifically focusing on land and water. And we were grateful that this opportunity was opened because we could place the practical issues that black farmers are dealing with in terms of a national platform that is presenting an opportunity for us to address them. So AFASA, just briefly, was started in 2011. It is an association with close to 300,000 members. The majority of the members are small-scale farmers. It also includes cooperatives and subsistence farmers. We also have commercial farmers. But generally, it is a black farmer organization. We also have, as I indicated, the commodity associations that are affiliated. They are red meat, sugar, grain, you know, so various commodities, wildlife, that are affiliated to AFASA. So the position that we're presenting here covers a spectrum of those. What I'm going to focus on is specifically what takes us to that position and what are we proposing within a short space of time. What we are saying as AFASA is that the plight of the black farmer in this country is one of the worst in terms of the position, because the failure of land reform and its root causes has disadvantaged black farmers mostly. And in a sense, this presents a problem because we know about the ills that face farm workers, and this also includes all those categories, but ours is going to specifically also focus on the farm workers. So we see the land reform failure being on the issue of identification of who the beneficiary is. We see the land failure being also in terms of the post-settlement support, that the farmers are actually not getting, and partly it deals with the problem, which is a generic problem, of a structural inadequacy from a training perspective in terms of access to skills to issues of access to finance, with 90% of the funds from the land bank DFIs to more in private sector being mainly for white establishments and black farmers having a serious problem of access to finance and also the problem of market. So we say to you today that ours is a proposal that says farmers have analyzed very specifically the issues of land reform failure. And at the root of those land reform failures is the following. One, the failure of government to properly implement the legislation that exists as well as driven under the current constitution. But we go further to say some of the pieces of legislation have made it difficult for farmers to operate. And some of those pull from the disinvestment as far as black farmers are concerned. We place this specifically in terms of the graphs that we have presented to you of the government spending on agriculture that has continued to go down. And these figures are showing generally that the commitment in terms of support of black farmers has been at the center of this problem. But what we are, in coming back to the issue of the root causes, we say the whole system in terms of the value chain of land reform is actually a big issue in terms of corruption, in terms of collusion between private sector as well as government. And at the center of that is that the current legislation does not address some of the specific issues. Land restitution has been extremely inefficiently implemented, but we are sitting with a situation where we do not have land redistribution laws that can assist in the redistribution of the land. So the absence of legislation also of dealing with expropriation of specifically agricultural land with or without compensation has also complicated the matter even further. And the implementation of the proposals that have come through the National Development Plan, the fact that they are not legislated but voluntary, makes it difficult for people to actually align with what is being there. So at the end of the day, we sit at the mercy of who the official is at that moment and how nice they would want to be. On the other hand, we sit at the mercy of being assisted by the white farmers. Whoever is nice or not nice, you are at that mercy. There's a structural problem of a system that just has not worked. What are we proposing then? We are proposing that we specifically address the issues of legislation. We would like to ensure that we have specific legislation that addresses the issue of expropriation with and without compensation. And we actually go further to say we recognize the Constitution and its accommodation of expropriation with some level of compensation. But we have a problem because that refers mainly to the issue of just and equitability. And in application, we have had serious problems of non-adherence to that, but at another level, we believe that we need a constitution that provides clarity on the matter of expropriation, because what has happened is that the focus has been on a market-based approach, and we believe that this has failed us. And linked to that is the expropriation, is the issue of willing buyer, willing seller. So we propose that the Constitution is pushed to amendment for clarity as far as the area of expropriation without compensation. Because whilst we appreciate the presentation of the possibility of the expropriation without the bill, which could include expropriation without compensation in specific areas, we also are concerned that this is going to result in that being contested and us being stuck in an unconstitutional resolution. So ours is to say we are pushing, lastly, for a whole dispensation.
I'm sorry, Doctor, I think we have run out of time.
Okay. So we're pushing for a dispensation for a transformative and comprehensive land reform.
My good doctor,
you okay.
have run out of time.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Honorable Zimani, I seem to acknowledge you in the beginning of my question. Are you fine? Thank you very much. Members, there you have it. Do you have any clarity seeking questions? You are not forced. Honorable Swart, Dr. Melder, Honorable Dukman, Honorable Mwabe, Honorable Mutapo, Honorable Mukwili, Honorable Fildani, lastly, Honorable Swart. In that order.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the presentation. I'd ask the doctor just to comment on the issue of should such an amendment be permitted. On page 9 of 20, I'd ask clarity on your proposition that the state lacks the capacity to effectively implement, monitor, and enforce land policies. On the issue of clarity, should expropriation without compensation be allowed? Is it not problematic, given your statement here, that the state lacks the capacity, and given what the evidence we've heard about corruption in the state departments, will that not aggravate the situation and not contribute to land reform? Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Next thing.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm here. I would like to thank the doctor for the presentation. Just one remark and then a question or two. On page 8 at the top, paragraph 4.3, you make the statement to say most of the land availed on the market and bought by the state is unproductive. We all know that that is not the case. You've got many examples and we all know that. On page 3 of your document, paragraph 1.5, you state that AFASA is registered entity representing 300,000 black farmers. Could you give us an indication where do they farm currently? And in connection then with that, I would like to, I've not heard you say anything about traditional land. In other words, land currently under the control of our traditional leaders. What is your position with regard to that? Thank you.
Thank you, Co-Chairperson. Thank you very much for the presentation. It's sincerely appreciated. I just want to get a view from the presenter. In terms of the issue of compensation, or let's say the issue without compensation, I just want to know, what is your view? Should it apply to all forms of land, or should it be only be restricted to certain portions of land? For example, development land, unproductive land, and so on. Can I just get your view on that? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Dr. Sabula Lamam. My question is based on your recommendations on page 20, the last page. The very first recommendation, 9.1, you speak about, you recommend the establishment of the land and agrarian ombudsman. It's something unique. Can you explain more about that? What informs that? What might be the objectives of that office? Thank you.
Co-chair, mine is just a comment. Thank you so much, Dr. Vuyo Mahlatsi, for the presentation. And thank you so much also for at least giving us recommendations, especially on page 13 of date 20, 5.9, and on recommendation as Honorable Mwabe has alluded to. I think it will assist us when we come to deliberation into looking into these matters, because others just come and they don't dwell much into giving us solutions. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Doc, for the presentation. My question to you, Doc, is that your recommendation is that Section 25 of the Constitution must be amended to allow expropriation without compensation. Now, there is an outcry in the country of race war as soon as the land is expropriated. Now, I want to check with you, Doc, with your research that we have done, do you see that as an immediate thing or as an event that can happen in a country where when the Section 25 of the Constitution is amended, there will be a race war? Another question for me is that how are you presently, you said you are representing about plus minus 300,000 black farmers. Now, I want to check the status, the current status where you are operating as black farmers currently. How is the environment that you are operating in, especially where the land, most of the land is in the hands of the white people? How does that affect your operation? Lastly, is the issue of accessing funds as emerging black farmers. Do you struggle to access funds, and how are you struggling, if you struggle, to access funds and to access the means of banks and all those economic hubs in the country? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Thanks, Doc, for the presentation. I'm here. Okay. I want to preface my question with the following statement so that you respond in context. South Africa has high levels of food insecurity, and you take it upon yourselves to help to produce food. You say you have over 300 farmers in your association. Now, should there be more land made available to farmers or for farming operations through the amendment of the Constitution, what is the average size of a farm that is needed for it to make, one, economic sense, as well as to help to address the social needs, in particular food insecurity? Remember, the motion we passed in Parliament was about amending the Constitution in order to serve, to satisfy a public cause. And that's why I'm talking about the social needs. The past situation where people just farm for profit purposes. And that's where why I want to know what is the average size that you would be needed. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I was going to, let me touch on the last one. 6.2, you talk about a land ceiling. If you could explain what do you mean when you say land ceiling, or put differently, what are you proposing the land ceiling to be? And then on page 11, you indicate that you want to debunk the myth that transformative land
distribution will harm the South African economy. You know, that argument has been raised many times, that we must be careful that we don't harm, and you're saying it's a myth that if we transform, it will harm the economy. If you could just expand on that one. And then finally, somewhere in your document you talk about water rights should be water rights should be attached to property and not to ownership or something to that effect. I just don't know where, but it was somewhere in here. If you could talk to me about what's your understanding of the water rights, or what are you proposing exactly around water rights? Ngiyabonga, Chairperson.
There you have the questions posed to you and some comments. If ever there is a comment that says what you were saying was not true, don't be tempted to argue back. We believe that what you are saying was true. Fire on. You have not more than 10 minutes.
Thanks, Chair. You're not going to have that problem. And I would like to thank the honorable members for having gone through our documents and for the questions. Let me quickly address them. Firstly, the issue of the state capacity. The state capacity is something that we raise because we believe at the center of land reform problems and failures is the issue of state capacity. But we also appreciate that state capacity is in the form of human resource, financial resource. So in a sense, it is about placing the right people at the right places and also ensuring that you deploy the right financial resources to address the issues you're talking about. So the condition of the state capacity is not a permanent state. It is a matter that can be addressed, and it is a matter that we believe that through this process we are able to address, and already working together with the state, with private sector, all of us now currently engaged in those discussions, we believe that we can deal with that decisively. So it's not a permanent condition. It is a condition that if Parliament, civil society, as well as government, private sector, come together and make sure that government accounts in addressing this issue properly and put the right people. We do have the people. We just don't have the right people at the helm right now. Linked to that is our proposals that we are putting in terms of institutional reform, because we also believe that the current institutional dispensation is not the right one in addressing the right issues. And there are proposals around bringing a more effective and efficient approach in addressing and targeting the farmers directly, which forms part of the proposals we make. So there's an issue that says most of the land is not, it's not true. We have evidence to what we have presented, particularly in terms of what we have dealt with. And we've also participated further with ARC in terms of the plus farms that were given, looking at what is productive and what is not productive. So it is a fact that most of the land that has been acquired has been land in former homeland areas. And we do know, you know, the state of that land. And part of the issue that we are raising is that the approach or principle of willing buyer, willing seller is actually at the center of government getting unproductive land. Because what happens is, I'm a development planner. You need to plan, you know, get an agroecological, you know, condition of the land, have a plan of the market, have a plan of the people and what that soil can give you. And you are able to say, the land that I'm acquiring is going to deal with this. We don't have that luxury in this country because we have a situation where you cannot deal at an area base and say this is what is needed. You sit and hope that Mr. Van der Merwe will wake up one day and say, I am willing and here is a piece of land that I'm putting forward. So basically, the strata is not conducive. So the people who become willing are not necessarily those who provide you with the most productive land. So it's a situation which is a fact, and also the prices, which are so high for the productive land, are also creating problems. So that is an issue, and we have the specific pieces of land that we have been tracking across the board. So, and that is why we're saying most of it. We're not saying all of it. We're saying most of it. Where do these farmers farm? We have a combination of farmers as AFASA. Some of them farm on communal land. They are subsistence farmers. Some of them are running cooperatives on, you know, land that has been acquired by government. They are also, you know, the outcry of AFASA at this point is that most of them are on these leases, which are not signed, three-month leases, and it's been a push from our side to get title deeds on some of this land. So others have acquired land on their own by purchasing land. So we've got a whole combination of people farming across in terms of these areas. And at the hearing, a number of AFASA members were there, and they were actually highlighting the issues directly and personally in terms of the problems of overgrazing as far as communal land is concerned. One farmer even highlighting that his cattle feed on pampers, which are soil disposable nappies. So there is a serious problem there, but it is an area that we are hopeful that through this process will be, so the demand for land is big. And can I say that we are here not just to deal with Lindiwe's piece of land now. The debate that we are having is for the future of the people of this country. So it is not a debate in terms of where am I farming now. It is a debate of how do we make sure that we address issues of justice and equality and productivity for everybody. So the traditional land forms part of the package. But the traditional land in terms of what we understand, you know, studies were done in the 60s which were already showing that, you know, homeland land is already overgrazed. There is generally a land problem. And the issue now is not to perpetuate the spatial inequalities and push people further into homeland, which is where they are. What we are talking about is making land available so that people can be part and parcel of production across the board in the value chains that are not mainly in a particular area. But we are having serious discussions with the traditional leaders and are actually looking at models of ensuring that we have security of tenure beyond just the land that individual communities own and have titles as far as CPAs are concerned. So this forms part of the package, and basically it is something that we are strongly dealing with. The compensation, which land? I think in our proposal, we make it very clear in terms of specifications where we believe very strongly considerations because of expropriation of land without compensation and where we can start. And basically, that elaborates further in our document because I don't want to go through each and every one of that, and the chairperson is on my case. But we do specify in terms of possibilities of expropriation of land without compensation in those areas immediately. And the establishment of the land ombud is another area. We came up with it already in 2016. The injustices and evictions on land, as well as the cases that black farmers find themselves in, and even when cases, you know, in terms of price and all that, you depend. If you don't have money to go and get the right lawyer who will fight for you, you are doomed. And it is one of the reasons the farmers are pushing for an amendment, because they want a clarification. Because they are saying what happens is that you can have a legislation out of the constitution that pushes for expropriation without compensation. But the problem is that that could be contested to be unconstitutional. And that can put us in a situation that we sit in court for life. And the ombuds is to specifically address the issues of people who are in these situations of being exposed to dispossession and injustices and evictions, and also unfair practices as far as the issues of the just and equitable pricing model is concerned.
Okay.
The race wars, we do not believe that there could be race wars. We as AFASA have been working very closely with the three other unions in NAFU and also AgriSA and DAO. And our focus as part of that has been to specifically address our issues of diversity, but also look at the concerns on the other side. What is good with that process, because it's been an ongoing process, is that recently we announced a collaboration of all of these, where we're working towards a national agricultural plan. And all four agreed that the current land reform situation is not feasible.
Thank you.
We are working
Doctor,
towards
thank
something.
Thank you very much. Members, I know that some of your questions might not have been answered, but I am, in the interest of time, those who feel very strong that they need answers, they can get the answers in writing from the good doctor. We have run out of time for this session. Mr. Zwangkruam?
Chair, I think that the novel issue that is arising now is the issue of land ceiling. It will be very important to be given guidance
on that.
First, on the land ceiling of what is the proposed land ceiling.
Can I give you a minute, doctor, on the land ceiling?
Yeah. Okay. The land ceiling is into water. Can I quickly deal with that? Because the critical issue here is that we're sitting with 98% of water rights sitting with white establishments. So basically our push is that there is no way that we can deal with that. We need to align water rights to the property, because right now if the individual goes, the rights move with the individual. And there are changes within the department right now to address the legislation. But we believe that that needs to be addressed urgently. So the second part linked to the issue of land ceiling, we actually are working on the research at this point. We cannot give you a particular figure, because it is something that we don't deal willy-nilly. We are very cautious to put a number and say, this is what you give to a farmer, because we, even amongst ourselves, you've got farmers who have less than 1 hectare, to farmers who require, in terms of the production capacity and the market needs, you know, hundreds of hectares. So the issue is, in terms of particularly looking at this at a broader level, issues of foreign ownership, and, you know, and that is something we would rather present our proposition on that.
Okay. Thank you. And thank you very much, Doctor, for your presentation.
Thank you so much, Chair.
Yes. I believe the next presenter here will be...
Sorry, Chair. My apologies, Chair.
Okay.
Are you going to ask the presenter to supplement her answers in writing? Because obviously there were some questions that were not answered, and she might like to supplement to the committee. Thank you, Chair.
Yes, that will be.
Say that.
Our next presenter here, according to the problem, will be Tswane Inner City Arts and Cultural Heritage Forum. Are they around? Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Or will present from there? No, I thought the good doctor will
go there.
Mr. Sindiso Solonzi.
Thank you very much, Jefferson. For the opportunity to everybody who came through and the officials in the assembly. My name is Archdeacon Old Emmanuel. I'm representing the Tswana Inner Cities and Cultural Heritage Forum in Pretoria, and I'm also here as the chief of the Abantu, the Amasengu Kingdom, based in Ngamakwe, including the traditional locations of Butterworth, Zomo, and Aitu. So I appreciate the opportunity. We are here. I'm here because of my role of being involved on the land process from the age of 16, 17 in Umtata. We bought a land from Zambule in Thornhill Farm. That land was occupied by some of our fellow neighbors, but we shared it among each other. As well, I'm here because I responded with my people. Also, whom I expected will be part of this panel, Chief Masela from Khayelitsha, who is the president in the Khoisan, and also Chief Bikicha, who is the current chairperson of the Amasengu Kingdom. But due to some other commitments, they couldn't be able to be here. But we appreciate the opportunity. We'll be representing as well the social cohesion program of Kontalesa, which recently was formulated on the 6th of August. In SLN Park in Pretoria under the chairperson of Dr. Matola Motsega. So at the moment, on our position on the land, we support expropriation of land without compensation because our people have suffered the most injustices in South Africa from colonial regimes, from people who came in our country illegally and also took the land by force. With the multitudes of our people who were assassinated on the Ngayekhibi Wars, famously known as the Frontier Wars. Those wars started during the early 1700s and they ended in 1889. My uncle, Chief Bikicha from the Royal House of Kredlamini House, was the grandson of the first leadership that met during the time of Bishop Alif in Butterworth, who took our people to Epiete to form a treaty during the times of the wars. So our people, they formally agreed to have a treaty with the British Queen Victoria, and some of them, they joined the workforce of white people, and some of them were fighting among the white forces. But that treaty was broken based on the distrust that came out from the relationship that we were trying to establish with the Europeans who were here. So in 1889, the treaty was abolished, but my uncle Bikicha was invited to England during the time of Victoria to be thanked for their role. But for now, we are responding because most of our land was lost in those wars, starting from here in Cape Town, and most of our people were driven to what is famously known as the homelands in Transkei, and they ended up in the Kai River. That's where the wars ended up, in Transkei, along the Fish River. So we have realized that in this present time, it's very, very necessary that as the current government is pursuing this program, it's very convenient that the traditional authorities, they should be given maximum recognition and contribution and ultimate working together with the state of South Africa, which is a democratic institutions. Where I come from, there have been a lot of questions from the country at the present moment about the role of traditional leadership and what they can play at this moment, but people seem to forget that traditional leadership have been here and they've played a significant role in governing the country and contributing in terms of agriculture. I grew up under the education of K.G. Matanzima, who was the first state black South African to lead a government here in South Africa in 1963 up until 1979. K.G. made a very exemplary, good example to create, generate a very huge amount of economy through agricultural science, which amounted to 450 billion and above during the long time period of which it was an aristocracy having democratic institutions within it. So we feel that the process of handling the land of the section 25.1 needs to be amended, and we should allow expropriation of land without compensation to proceed. And also all the past disadvantaged communities, they need to be appropriated their human rights by being given back their forefathers' property, which is meaning their inheritance, their lands, and everything that prevails there. And all the rural communities and land property that is under the administration of the traditional leaderships, it should be kept in that state. And some of the land is actually been taken. Most of our people, they can still remember, because that process of taking the land by force is something that has been also continuously happening, not only from 1652. Most of our people, we still have them today. They still locate the land that was taken from them, and they have never been given back that land. And the government have never done any program to give those people back that land. So we feel that there should be a program, and we have generated a program now of an audit whereby we have consulted with all our people, because most of our nation resided in Northern Cape, Eastern Cape, and in Namakwa. Original Namakwa is the original of the Nama people, Namakwa, and that's why they were calling this area Namakwa land, because some of them, they migrated to Namibia, and some of them went to Botswana, while others were in Tswane. Most of them have been called Amahlubi, but we are different tribes. So we have reformed our nation of Amahlubi to be called by the old nation of Abantu, which means the Bantu nation. Because we believe that in the current misunderstandings that people, they don't understand about who we are as South Africans, there have been a lot of debates regarding that, but so far, we claim and acknowledge that we are the descendants of Abatwa. I am from Mtwagu, which means the place of Abatwa. And close to my village, Mtwagu, we have another village called Kwekwini, which is also the original San and the Khoi names. So those people, they intermarried with our Abantu people. So we have a rightful claim to be the descendants of Abatwa, which means they were the Khoi Khoi and the San people. In anthropology, I've done this research. I have evidence to prove our existence in this country, which is 2,000 years ago. White people, they know about our existence in this country. That is not only from the time they came here. It's more than 2,000 years. And we have evidence of pottery, a lot of artifacts to prove our existence, and also our agricultural efforts in terms of practicing agriculture within this country. When white people came, they found us with cows, we're doing agriculture, we lost a lot of all those properties. Our people are suffering today, living in very, very unfavorable conditions. So we feel that with the trustees that we have recovered as well, which was signed by Sir George Grey in 1855 for Amahlubi Nation, which includes the areas in Cape Town, in Port Elizabeth, we have tabled a program to reclaim those locations. But we believe those are not the only locations that we can be claiming back. So we hope that the government is going to assist us in that regard. Families in rural and urban areas should retain their property without any interference from state or municipality offices. But the traditional leadership is to monitor the process in a just and fair, transparent manner known to the culture of that society. South Africa is a rainbow country now with so many other nations residing here. However, there have been other people who came from various locations. So we claim and believe that South African land belongs to the indigenous communities of this continent, which means the Abantu, the Khoi, the San, and also at this present moment, we welcome all the other people who come and reside in this country, but we wish that our heritage and culture should be considered and respected according to the Constitution, as we have the National Heritage and Resource Agency of 1997 and the Tswane Declaration Act, which actually approves the recognition of indigenous communities and also the UNESCO traditional recognition. Thank you.
Can you wrap up?
In closing, I would love to see that after this program, we will have a balanced approach that the government can work side by side with the traditional communities and also with the formula that we will be presenting with the government in terms of how the distribution process should be handled. We believe that it will be a successful program. Thank you very much.
Members, Honourable Smith, there's only one clarification question.
Yeah, thanks, Chair.
Honourable Gombo, Honourable Filtat.
Thanks, Chair. The presenter spoke about the land should be given back to the people. Are you suggesting that people get title deeds? Or who owns the land? That's the first question. When you say that the land should be given back to the people, and at the same time you also talk about the role of the chiefs and so on must not be touched. We know that in those areas there's no title deeds. So are you suggesting we give those people title deeds, or how do we handle it when you say give it back to the people? And then just, I'm very curious, somewhere here you say traditional land should not be sold to foreigners unless foreigners married and live in that area. Who exactly are foreigners? When you say it should not be sold to the foreigners, who are you talking about exactly when you say foreigners? Thanks, Chair.
I just want to get this clear. Is your submission saying that you agree with amendment of Section 25 of the Constitution to allow for expropriation of land without compensation? Is that your position? And how do we then redistribute the land? What is the summary of your submission in terms of how the land should be redistributed once it has been expropriated without compensation? The concise answers will help us to understand your thinking in terms of your submission, because some of the issues that raised, I don't think they're necessarily related to what we're busy with.
Thank you very much, Chair. You say specifically that you want Section 25.1 to be amended. Now, if that were to take place, how would those people who acquire land, how would their property rights be protected if Section 25.1 were to be amended? Unfortunately, you don't give us an indication of what kind of wording should replace Section 25.1. I know that's the primary subsection that protects property rights, which is very much at the center of this whole debate, you know, since we started. So I would like to know now, if it were to be amended, how would you want it to be reworded? Secondly, would you confirm that you are more about protecting heritage, culture, and enhancing livelihood of the landless people in South Africa? Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. Okay. Those were the questions.
Okay, thank you. Let me check again. Let me start with the first question of title deeds. Currently, the traditional communities in Transkei and other areas in South Africa does not have title deeds for those lands. As a result of our inheritance, we were not using title deeds for lands in those times of our traditional leadership until the new forms of governance that were introduced during the colonial times, during the time of Sir George Grey. I have the trustees that were given by him from that time, but those trustees does not cover all the areas that our nation was residing on them. So the trustees in this present time, our position on trustees, we're working to have the traditional leadership whole body opening a trust for that whole community that it is representing. And the people who are part of that traditional community will then be given portions of land after the consultation. So we are working on these programs now through the traditional leadership areas of all the country as a form of a social cohesive effort to bring this general formula for everybody to have a generalized approach of how the process can be handled. But when it comes to the trustees, we believe that the traditional leadership must be the one that is handling that, and then the people who are part of that community can then have a sharing of that land. And also, you spoke about the program of distribution, how it should be handled. The program of distribution, we are working on having a program whereby, as a traditional leadership, we have a formula whereby it's been operating for all these centuries, but that formula is not been documented according to the modern way in terms of putting it on paper. So what we are proposing now, because there's been a gap when it comes to the modern ways of governance and traditional leadership, so at the moment we want a process whereby all the traditional leadership is being trained formally, and we have approached the traditional affairs, and they are already having a program of training the traditional leadership there, but we'll be adding more in relation to this bill of amending Section 25.1 of the Constitution so that it can relate to how they distribute land to all their communities. And also when it comes to that distribution program as well, we are still having issues of concern because other land we haven't really reclaimed it back as a traditional leadership. Hence our people, they lost that land through force. So that is another process that we are also pursuing. And also when it comes to the process of how the Constitution will be amended and the details of that process, how are we going to handle it? We support the process of expropriating the land without compensation because that land was not bought. So we don't believe that people should buy back that land. The land, it should be distributed to the people in my own place where we reside. People, they don't buy land from a chief. They either submit a few items or a goat, and then they will be given a portion of land, which is quite a reasonable amount of land for farming, for having your family, and when you are married. And also, coming to your question of a foreigner, who is a foreigner? In Africa and also in South Africa generally, specifically, we have the indigenous communities, which are the Khoi, the Abantu, the other tribes, which are mostly belonging to the children of Ham, the son of Noah, during the after the flood. So they have been migrating all over the continent. We have many tribes now. Those are the indigenous communities of Africa, and it's protected by the United Nations Bill and Act. But when it comes to a foreigner, it means any person who comes from outside the borders of South Africa, and also more especially from another continent. But based on the present reconciliations of the country, whereby we're having a lot of other people who are residing here, Chinese, Indians, we're not discriminating against those people. Coming to the issue of marriage, when it comes to the issue of marriage, we're considering marriages within our families, within our own nations. It would be an African other person who would come within our location to marry within our own location. But when it comes to the giving out of ownership of that land, it's something that must be monitored on the traditional leadership process. So that one is something that is on a development program because we are compiling now a document in relation to how this process should be handled. And then closing up with the issue of the amendment again to your question of how the details of the amending of the land, Section 25.1 and the property details. The issue of the land, we believe that the government at this present moment, it should work to give the people the land and amend the constitution to give the people without compensating for, without buying that land. The people mustn't buy the land, they should be given the land for free. And also the process whereby I spoke with the chief Ramadan in Pretoria. The chief gave me a portion of land there because I was discussing with him my family relations with Uchief Tswan. Hence, Chief Tswan was the son of King Moses. Those were the sons of Undlovu from Umasok, from the original Nguni house of traditional leadership. But when it comes to how the process of handling the details of amending the constitution, it's very important now that the government assists the general population, because there will be a process of tension now whereby people, they don't want to leave that land that they have occupied. We don't say that people who are white people mustn't have the land, but the land must be redistributed to everybody fairly so everyone can have the land to reside and also have the land to farm.
the process whereby the Department of Rural Development there is putting a lot of requirements on the form when you apply for land. They want you to have a degree in agricultural science and all that. It's a long, long process which is very unfavoring our people. When it comes to the training of agriculture, we grew up doing agriculture. It's an inherited heritage. We learn it from the family, from our grandfathers. It's something that we were doing. We don't go to school for it, but we don't encourage going to school having degrees. I've also studied agriculture. I know the technological side of it, but we promote that everybody must be given the land without having a qualification on agriculture. People will be trained. I'm glad that there is a African Federation of African Farmers, which we can bring on board to partner. We work together. We train all our people to practice modern farming and also economical benefits of farming in terms of exporting. Most of the land is owned by foreign people in South Africa, which is quite a very wrong process. So we wish to have our people being upfront of the economy and also having a share of the land. So that is very, very fundamental. When it comes to the ownership, we believe that our traditional leadership must have a sharing of the land that is going to be governed in partnership with the national government that is currently running the country. And that process should be part of the constitution. Thank you very much.
Are you a traditional leader in Pretoria or in...
Okay. No, I'm a traditional leader in Eastern Cape, mostly originally in Mamakwa.
Okay.
But we are having a council of Amazengu there, which starts from Ewillow Vale, Butterworth, Bomo, and Butterworth. Yeah. Those are the main traditional locations.
Okay.
But the other ones, the outside, Sataram, East London, to Epid.
So the issue of Tswane is because you...
No, Tswane is just I'm there because of my affiliation with other structures there. I'm working with for other development programs.
No, thank you very much. Hugo.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thank you.
The next presentation to landless people is it landless movement of South Africa. Mr. Mashaki.
Okay, thanks, Chair. Honorable Chair, Constitutional Review Committee, Parliament of the Republic of South Africa in Cape Town. I thank this opportunity to present our position as Lamosa. Firstly, I'm Speaker Masake of Murray Busho in Bushbuck Ridge. You know Bushbuck, a northern area, and Emfanzini in Mpumalanga province. I'm a community leader. I'm also elected on board of Lamosa. Our democratic community structures is an affiliated to Lamosa, and Lamosa participated in hearings of Constitutional Review Committee about Section 25 at various public hearings and the Portfolio Committee on Rural Development and Land Reform about the Restitution Amendment Bill. Now, honorable members, before I go further, let me pronounce before you that I'm with a worker a lawyer in Lamosa. Mr. Hank Smith is here with me. Now, I addressed the Motlanthe High Level Panel in January 2016, in Nelspruit. And our legal entity has still not received a title deed. Now, as I'm speaking now, In Murray Pusho Traditional Authority, they are finalizing verification process. And this is an insult to the land claimants of our area. I'm talking about the four portions, Onservach, Fort Itzer, Hebron, and Belchabondes. What we've seen for the past 25 years is the recycling of the Regional Land Claim Commission in our area, particularly Mpumalanga province. And they have done little to address the question of restitution. At the national level, LAMOSA monitored the land reform program over 25 years and participated in three cases in the Constitutional Court to protect the integrity of the program. LAMOSA also assists communities to implement our own action plans. LAMOSA filed submission and PowerPoint presentation of 9 pages for this hearing. I shall talk to the presentation for 10 minutes and I would like to answer questions on the presentation. Section 25 is about transforming property relation and power relation in our land. The Constitutional Assembly drafted Section 25 with the mandate of our society. The first task of the Parliament was to ensure that laws are passed to make the transformation happen and implement Section 25. Parliament passed some of the necessary land reform laws, but not all. The executive, the cabinet, the ministers, and the department, and the provinces and municipalities failed to make coherent policies, implement systems, and manage their land reform resources. Also, Parliament gave small budgets to land reform. And Parliament is being frustrated in its oversight functions by the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform, the Land Claims Commission, the Value General, and number of other dysfunctional institutions, including Provincial Development Cooperative. Now, for us, the question is this. Will it help us, our communities, to reignite our own agency and contributing our own resources to amend Section 25? The answer is yes. It is going to push the department to implement the laws that the Parliament makes to efficiently employ the resources that the Parliament votes for. The answer is no. If, after any amendment, which may take years, this Parliament and the departments are going to sit back and wait another 25 years without implementing transformation of property. Now, honorable members, LAMOSA has two proposals. Proposal one, immediately pass a better expropriation bill that spells out the detail of making absolutely clear our society's interest in transforming property and power relations, including little, if not zero, compensation for expropriation. Proposal two, amend Section 25 to push this Parliament and the Department to make transformation happen. Now, honourable members, let's go to page 2 of our submission. I think, honourable members, you do have a document. Let's go to block 1, which talks about the online presentation. Now, here, LAMOSA proposes amendment to Section 25 to really legitimate the section. Now, subsection 3, to ensure that the land reform is listed compensation factor. Subsection 4, to ensure that those affected by expropriation explicitly includes farm workers and beneficial occupiers on expropriated land and communities of expropriated communal land. Now, two, explicitly to
to state compensation owner may be zero and farm workers, occupiers be compensated separately from owners. Banks may be compensated separately for bank held loans, which are collateralized by land. Now, let's walk to subsection 8, to ensure that mining and minerals may be distributed. Subsection 9, to ensure an effective fast-tracking of land reform and agent enacted of effective expropriation, tenure and redistribution statutes and their implementation. Now let's go to page 3, honorable member. Then we'll skip that one to save time. Let's go to page 4 of submission, block 1, Lamuza's position. Now, bullet 1, Lamuza participated in public hearings of Mutlantle High-Level Panel, the CRC, and the Portfolio Committee on Expropriation Bill and Restitution Amendment. Now, honorable members, our position is the same as the position presented by Foundation for the Human Rights, presented by Advocate Dumisa Ntsebeza. Now, Lamuza's position is to request you to consider and to motivate the amendments that will ensure effective and efficient land reform and to make it clear that zero compensation is constitutional. That's our position. Now let's page through page 5. Let's walk to page 5, honorable members, subsection 3, as is indicated in our slide. Now under subsection 3, we take all number F in terms of the submission there. The notion commitment to land reform and to reform agency to bring about equitable access to all South African natural resources. Further factors are added that land reform is agent, honorable members. Let's walk to page 6 in terms of our document. Subsection 4C. We only take C in terms of the submission. Those affected by expropriation shall include owner of expropriated property and also beneficial occupier and also a community of expropriated communal land, a farm worker and expropriated land. Page 7, I think I'll be concluding, Honorable Chair. Page 7, subsection 4D and E. Compensation. We have already said that on page 2. Compensation must be in a manner that it approved separately, respectful for an owner, a beneficial occupier, a community, a farm worker, a lender, and any other person affected. And also, a compensation may be in a form of money or compensation in a kind or comparable redress, equitable redress of either similar form of may include participants seen by affected person in the development of expropriation of land. As I conclude, honorable members, in terms of the mining, in subsection 8 and 9, in terms of mining and related reform, I think this one will force actually the state and the parliament to do its job. Now, further, when you look at the last page, which is the page 9, all the highlighted red font indication, that's where now we explain our position as Lamuza. In page 9, you know, this font, which is in red, in the last page. As I conclude, Honorable Chair, if the committee is not persuaded that Section 25 be amended to re-legitimize and revitalize the land reform in order to require agent law, reform and accountable land reform, then LAMOSA proposes that the CRC recommends that a constitutional expropriation act provide for the categorization of those affected by expropriation. That will be the owner, the occupier, and the bank. Be compensated or not compensated, of course, separately, and that court be given the power to order expropriation. I do submit, Chairperson.
Honorable Swart, Honorable Goranov, Honorable Fitane, Honorable Fitbambo, Honorable Smith. In that order.
Thank you. Just one or two clarity-seeking questions, and that is, and thank you for the presentation. I want to commend LAMOSA. I listened to your submission at the Restitution of Land Rights Amendment Bill. And firstly, you make reference on page 3 of your submission when you refer to subsection 7 of 25 about the dereliction of duty by the state on the restitution issue. And that was a strong argument in your constitutional court challenge on the issue of the Restitution of Land Act, where you wanted to ring-fence the early claims. Do you still, does this not apply now? Should the expropriation of land without compensation be allowed? Can you trust the state, given its lack of implementation in the past, to continue, given your strong stance of LAMOSA on the Restitution of Land Bill? Will it not be a similar problem? Will you clarify your concerns that you express here, where you say this is an example of gross dereliction of duty by the state? So that's the first issue. The second issue, do you support title deeds? The third issue is, I like your solutions, your proposals. You propose one, and then secondly, an amendment, if possible, the expropriation bill itself, which is helpful. But you refer to the high-level panel report, that is urgent business of Parliament. As I understand the high-level panel report, it says it is not necessary to amend Section 25. That is, it is presently formulated. It makes sufficient provision to deal with your concerns. Thank you for that three clarity-seeking questions, Chair.
Me. Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for the presentation. I just want to know, if you look at the statistics of the Land Claims Court, 92% of those who have claimed, when they got the option to take the land or the money, they took the money. I just want to know why. What is your explanation for that? Can you just give me a little bit of an insight? And will it change? Do you think it will change in future, and whether that was a mistake for those not taking the land instead of the money?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Is it my turn?
Oh,
thank you. Okay. Let's go to page 7 of your submission. Right in the middle, you expressed concern about the interests of the banks, the private conglomeration of private individuals vis-a-vis a national cause of millions who are landless, because that's what banks are. You say the last thing we need in this country is the rhetoric that gets investors jittery and stops us from moving from the pedestrian growth. The critical issue for South Africa is attracting investment and growing the economy. Now, my understanding is that you go around the country, the world. You go to India, you go to China, go to all sorts of places, and you're looking for investors. These are non-South Africans, in order to save South Africans who are starving. Now, are you suggesting that we should not amend Section 25 so that we leave the landless poor without the basic asset for growing their own economy in their own country, and rather favor a policy which sends us scampering all over the world looking for investors. Is this what you're suggesting? Secondly, are you arguing that we should abdicate the constitutional instruction in subsection 8, which reads, go to page 8 of your submission, and it reads thus, no provision of this section nor compensation. Compensating may impede the state from taking legislative and other measures to achieve land, water, and mineral and mining rights reform. Now, are you saying that we should not make provisions in order to address that? Or are you insisting that there should be compensation? If you insist that there should be compensation, question one wants to put to you. Less than 24 hours ago, the Minister of Finance declared that the state of South Africa is not cash aflush. Where would South African government get the money for buying land? Those are my questions to you, given the latest state for that. Thank you.
Lord, thanks, Chair. Do you know there is a very sombre observation I'm going to make about these submissions that we got in the public hearings and here in Parliament. So all the people who the South African laws and Home Affairs categorize as white people, they oppose expropriation of land without compensation and amendment of the Constitution. And all black people who come and make submissions accompanied.
Point of order, Chairperson.
Accompanied by white
point
people.
Of order.
Do the same thing
everywhere. It's completely out of order.
Chairperson.
No, it's okay.
Let him conclude. Then they will, after conclusion, they will make a point of order.
Can you settle down? Honorable Shibambu, when a point of order is raised, it compels me to suspend the proceedings and listen to the point of order. And then out of that, no, you can't say oh no, why? Because the member is raising a point of order. Dr. Miller?
Thank you, Chairperson. I find it a very inflammatory racist statement to refer to all whites want this and all blacks want that. We've been listening to presentations across the board from different races with different points of view. The second point is, it's even factually completely wrong. There's no legislation from the Department of Home Affairs that classifies people in South Africa. We've got a new constitution since 1994, and it seems the EFF is not aware of that.
Honorable Melder, what Mr. Shibambu is saying here, it's his opinion. He's expressing an opinion, and I'm going to allow him to express that opinion. I don't really think...
Chair, no one said SA releases figures of unemployment and poverty. It says that unemployment amongst black people, amongst white people is dismal. It is part of our category. Home Affairs classifies this clear constitutional and legalistic categorization. That is one issue that I wanted to clarify. And I wanted to make an observation that all people who are accompanied to come and make submissions here by white people, they always oppose expropriation of land without compensation. I do not think that this an organization that is called Landless Organization, which can
point
and
of order,
the submission is that
point of order.
Mr. Shibambu,
I want to ask a question.
Yeah.
Chair.
I have a point of order.
What is the
Chair.
Structure of Lamosa?
Okay, let me take the point of order first.
Okay. The point of order is there's an aspersion against the lawyer that is representing Lamosa because he is white. If Mr. Shibambu...
I'm not finished. You can call a point of order on a point of order.
I would ask you, Chair, to rule that inference is out of order, Chair. Thank you.
Okay.
Can I ask the question, Chair? I don't think that... Who funds Lamosa?
Point of order.
Can we get us an answer? What is the organizational structure of LAMUSA and who funds LAMUSA? Who pays for your lawyers? Are they voluntary and everything else? So that we can understand this extremely reactionary submission that has been made here, which is not consistent with people who are landless.
Look, members, I want you to assist this process. Where we are now, we need clarity-seeking questions on the presentations that presentation that has been made. We are not questioning the authenticity or rather the people who are here representing us. I indicated from the beginning that our role as parliamentarians in this session is to listen to what is being presented. It's not to agree or to disagree with what is being presented. We'll have a chance when we table a report where we'll then factor in our argument. So I think your question, Mr. Shibambo, I'm not going to allow it. Yeah. Mr. Filtane, Honorable Filtane at the point of order earlier on.
Thanks, sir. Just to put matters in perspective here. An African like me wanted to be a lawyer. I was stopped by apartheid government. That's why you've got white lawyers today.
Honorable Filtane, I sympathize with you that you are not a lawyer, but it does not feature anywhere in this discussion.
You know, Chair, thanks. I don't know why you say you are not going to allow LAMUSA to answer the DP's question, because earlier this morning I asked the similar question to the first presenters about their composition and how they operate, and you never said you are not going to allow that question. So it's the same question. Let us not be emotional on this matter. When we raise issues of white supremacy in the country, it's a fact, it's there. You must allow them to answer us so that when we deliberate with the report, we know exactly who are we dealing with.
No, the questions were not similar. Actually, the question that you asked was about the membership of an organization. Where are we now? Honorable Smith,
as Honorable Shivabu finished, I
did defend Honorable Hink Smith as well, Mr. Smith.
No, thank you, Chair. Chair, the presentation in many of the pages talks about zero compensation, zero compensation, zero compensation. And then on your first block, you say, your first block, block number one, I don't know what, page two I think it is. You say banks may be compensated separately for bank-held loans and people may be. Who's going to compensate the banks? You think that's what you're suggesting we do. We change the constitution to say banks may be compensated for their loans. Once we've done that, how do we operationalize it? Yeah. Because the question is, who will pay the bank? So that's the question that I'm asking, Chair. And that goes also for your bullet point before that. You say farm workers and occupiers may be compensated. And who's going to compensate them? What are they going to be compensated for? How does that assist us with land tenure? Because are you suggesting they get put off the land that they're living on and get compensated? Are you suggesting they live on that? I'm not understanding. Because the question is, should we change the constitution to allow for expropriation? And if we do, how do we deal with land tenure? How do we deal with agricultural security and all those type of things? these people that you're saying must be compensated separately. Why are we going to compensate the land owner? Why are we going to compensate the farmer? Who's going to give them the money? If you could just explain those things.
Before you answer them, just to maybe try to shape what the question from Mr. Shivam. Who do you represent? That I think that would be a fair question. Who do you represent? Thank you. Not a document.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and members, for being read our document. I can see from the question that you have worked through our document, and we appreciate that. Sometimes we think parliamentarians, they are sleeping, they are not reading our documents. But it is clear that now you
went through... That is an insult. You must not say that. You must not say that. It's an insult.
Am I protected?
You are protected, okay. And you never insulted anybody.
Yes.
That is what you were thinking.
Mm. It's the same thing that my DP has observed.
No. Yes, Lamusa is formed by the communities which have been previously dispossessed. After forming legal entities, they came together to push to make sure that they bring their land back in four provinces. They came together and formed Lamusa. Firstly, it was Trek. Then they form Lamusa to ensure that they bring their land back. So from Rustenburg, from Mapulaneng, from Banda, all those lands which were taken by the apartheid regime, they come together. They came together and form a strong force so that they can push that they get their land back. Now, when coming to funding, fortunate enough, we are not funded by FVPS. Fortunate enough.
No, no, Chair, on a point of order, Chair.
There was a question raised.
Chair?
There was a question. I'm
okay.
Responding to the question. They asked
nice,
me who
when
funded.
It comes to you, ne?
It's okay.
They asked me who funds Lamusa.
Not who's not funding.
Yeah, who's not funding Lamusa also. You see? So, I was just pointing that fortunate enough we are not funded by VBS then. Secondly, members, Lamusa is an NGO and also they actually go for funding. Any organization which is NGO in terms of the act, they are liable to do fundraising efforts. So we are funded by our social partners, honorable citizens of the country, even the communities that we are leading. They are funding themselves in terms of... there are some lawyers who come and contribute their service to Lamusa for free. So we appreciate that. So now that's how Lamusa is strong, because it's an open organization. We allow people to assist. Those who are from universities, the researchers, they come and assist us in terms of the pieces of legislation. And also, those who are doing law, they come maybe to summarize the constitution, the pieces of constitution, to make it easier for our members to understand in terms of the land reform. So now, that's how the Lamusa is formed. Now, when coming to the question of page 7, honorable member, you raised the question. We are not saying that. This is the guy who's saying this here, if you look at this particular page, says Covadia. Covadia is saying that, not us. We are only commending, responding on the bullet point at the last page. It's not us. This is the president of the bank council.
who's saying here, I quote, on page 7 or another matter, I think it's paragraph 2 from the block.
Okay, no, we have the document.
Yeah, you have the document. Go through.
Can you address the question of Honorable Smith? Who must pay the bank?
Who must pay the bank? I want to put it here to say, if you look at the banks, the Polestar, you name them, most of them, they were funded by the apartheid regime, and also they were funded by apartheid regime to push for their services, and also they were subsidized. You look at the farmers, they were subsidized from Trust Bank, from the state bank, which was run by the apartheid regime. Then we are saying, if expropriation has to happen on banks, remember some banks are situated on the land which were been dispossessed from the people, the original people of this land. Then the bank was established there. We are saying, if expropriation has to happen, it has to happen where it is necessary. But when coming to compensation, the government, if it needs to compensate, it needs to compensate the bank, because we have taken back that the apartheid regime also have been funding the bank. Now, when coming to ring fencing, our position is still clear on that respect. We have said, we have been persistently and categorically saying the law's claim must be ring fenced before we can come up with an the opening of a.
Unfortunately, you know, it's our getting issue, but the time is limited.
Yeah, unfortunately, but we will try to submit answers.
Please,
because I've seen that most of the questions have not...
Oh, Honorable Dane, are you feeling very strong on something?
Chair, the presenter says that he distances himself from what he has voluntarily quoted. But in his long explanation, he confirms what I had inferred.
Yes.
That he quoted this statement by the Banking Association in support of their argument. Now, I want him to come out clear. Do you support this?
Because of time, Honorable Filitani, that will not be possible.
Anyway, he has indicated that they support.
Okay. Thank you very much.
But I want to propose that to Mazara mechanism to deal with France.
With people of France. Point of order, please.
We need to get...
No, Mr. Chair. I'm not going to allow that.
France.
If this committee had any idea of what Lamosa does and what Mr. Henk Delfort has done,
Honorable Swart,
Smith has done,
I have dismissed the statement by Mr. Shivambu.
But
it does not stand. It does not
totally.
Our presenters from Lamosa, thank you very much for your presentation, guys. Yes, it was a pleasure having you. The next presentation will be from Azapu. President Strike Togwas. President, where do you miss? Or is there something that you should press there?
Thank you, Chair, and may I greet members in the House, and suggest that all protocol observed. I'm not accompanied, So you might just not know where I stand. But just in case you get confused, especially those of you who are interested in the derby on Saturday, this has got nothing to do with it. Absolutely. They just happen to have liked the colors that you have chosen, because our gold represents issues of land and the economy. Our black represents the people who have been dispossessed and are oppressed. And alongside it, there's a clenched fist and a star that heralds a socialist program. Now, a lot of you who have participated and have read history will actually know that during CODESA and negotiations, we actually boycotted them as this organization. And part of the reason that we boycotted is because the issue of land was not on the table. And the transformation of the economy was not being entertained. But in particular, Section 25, that dealt with the issues of property. Now, I'm not going to speak much on what we have written, because a lot of it was just motivation as to where we come from as this organization, including the fact that we have lost a lot of our leaders and revolutionaries who died for the return of the land back to its rightful owners. And it is what we believe, that the land is something worth dying for. And it is not unique to this country. It has happened all over the world where revolution has taken place. We make a case, an example of countries like Tanzania in the document, Cuba, and Zimbabwe. We are pleased with what we saw in Tanzania with Julius Nyerere and giving land to his people right at the beginning. And being able to see what Tanzania can do with the agrarian revolution, and those who missed it, like Kenya, are still in problems. And we also saw that in Zimbabwe, 20 years after independence, there were problems, and the war veterans and generally the people on the ground started to rise and say we must get our land. But the manner in which they handled the issue did not give them enough chance to do it cleanly. Now we say in our country, it is not a matter that we can look away and think things will be okay. It will lead us to a blood revolution in this country. In time to come, when we don't deal with issues of land, our people are going to rise, whether we like it or not. So we can pussy over it now. It won't be long before it catches up with us. In fact, you can see the signs. The seeds are actually being planted. I come from an area in the Vaal where along the Golden Highway, people have decided just to grab the land. And it's just thin and thin and thin all over the place. But this issue is actually making our own people to be pitted against one another, whereas they are supposed to be on one side. And what we are saying is that it's just going to be a question of time before they go to a Parfandarneve place and occupy it. And this is where now you're going to see bloodshed. We also want to say to Parliament that this matter cannot just be left to the ordinary men in the street. It is a matter that Parliament must get into it and arrest it. If it doesn't, then people can do as they please. And we say that become unfortunate. We would like Parliament to arrest, and you've got some suggestions to make. So when you look at our document, it is crafted in such a way that it actually motivates even those who didn't believe that this can be an issue. It actually gives a motivation for it. And it is also saying it is not just going to be a Christmas where you decide today that you are transforming or you are giving land this way or the other and then it's peaceful. It might actually mean that some people have to lose what they have in order for us to be where we want to be. But can I go to the suggestions that we have as the Azanian People's Organization, AZAPO, that will be found in page 26, 27, and 28. I hope the next few minutes I'm left with will cover these points as I read them. It is bullet 13, further policy proposal on an effective and expeditious land redistribution and agrarian reform program. And without any expanding section 25, we must expand it, of the Constitution, which AZAPO also believes Parliament should, as a matter of agency, also consider complementary actions that will frame up the land redistribution program. Foremost among these will be a law that should compel all landowners, leaseholders, and occupants to disclose who they are, where they own the land, and for what purpose. These registers must be completed in triplicate for documentation and storage at local government level, at provincial level, and at national level. Such a register will expedite the process of completing a comprehensive land audit. Given the acute problem of housing in the country, where millions of people and entire families are homeless, Parliament should also consider passing a law that restricts ownership of property to only two houses of property, with one being a primary residence and another a recreational or holiday home. This is for implementation purposes, because in the what we are premised on, we are premised on the fact that our land was dispossessed. There was land conquered by the colonialists. And now we are saying we have to repossess and redistribute the land. And that we are not naive to the fact that it is something that can actually take time and a revolution can ensue on that aspect. All we are saying is that for now, so that a mechanism for this kind of parliament, we also recognize the kind of parliament we are in, and therefore suggest solutions for the kind of parliament we are in. There's this parliament, there's an ideal parliament, where we talk of a revolutionary parliament with the socialist ideals. So we say for this parliament, and for this period where we are as a people, these are the things that we are suggesting. Probably it will melt some hearts, and people might just give in to that. We say the sizes of these primary secondary residences must be regulated by law and must accommodate settlements by an average South African family. The primary residence may be able to be restricted to a maximum of 60 by 40 meters, whereas the recreational or secondary residence can be restricted to 40 by 40 square meters a plot. Such a measure will have the effect of releasing residential properties on the market, drive down exorbitant property prices, and allow many families to enjoy the basic human rights to housing and shelter. The anomaly and morally discrepant practice of using land and property as speculative investment because of the pervasive capitalist impulse that is dominating at present must be reversed and annulled. AZAPO believes that the right to housing and to shelter is a basic human right and must not be subjected to the vagaries of the market. Another important measure that must be enacted by this legislature is to prohibit ownership of land in Azania by foreigners Land is our national heritage and should not be available for sale to the highest bidder. Already in many jurisdictions, in the developed and developing world, this provision applies because countries recognize the land is an exhaustible and shared resource. At any rate, many Africans do not possess the capital to play the stock market on land. It is for this reason that we see most of our prime land in coastal towns like Ballito, sorry the spelling, Rattenberg Bay, and Port Edward, and so on. So we have got these measures that we are suggesting, and because of time, let me go to the concluding part and conclude by saying AZAPO has endeavored through this submission to make a political, ideological, economic, and cultural case for the reconquest of the land and for our forebears. It has done so by drawing on documentary, historical, and statistical evidence to demonstrate gross injustice that was suffered by African people and the black working class. During the brutal period of successive colonial and white minority regimes until the defeat of apartheid in 1994, the submission reveals the persistence of this injustice as morally indefensible and reprehensible. 24 years under ostensibly democratic trade union support, socialist aligned and African nationalism inspired government. We trust that our submission has generated important perspectives on how post-liberation and socialist societies proceed to deal with the question of land redistribution and agrarian reform, primarily to benefit the working class, the indigenous people, and the peasantry. We have also shared with this parliament the historical aspirations of our people on land, as they have been represented and recorded by the various components of the Black Consciousness Movement during the different epochs and periods of its 50 years existence.
I'm afraid, President.
Thank you very much. I think the document speaks for itself. Safe to say that we have to understand, Comrade Chair.
Thank you very much.
Members?
Mbabama. Alright, Honorable Mbabama, you will be the first. Honorable Filitane, Honorable Bigman, Honorable Shibambo. That's revolutionary. Lastly, Honorable Smith. Honorable Mtapo, and then Honorable Smith. In that, Honorable Mbabama.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you to AZAPO for the presentation. Page 15, and I will just read what you say here. AZAPO will support collective ownership and usage of land by the people through cooperatives, communal associations, and broad-based ownership systems. I'd just like to know how you guys can say this in light of the majority of CPAs failing. Have you considered that? Because most of the land that is owned by people now is under CPAs, and there is a huge failure in CPAs. And then again on page 15, you say that our land repossession programs must not produce an unintended outcome, which is a new black landed gentry, as we see in countries such as Kenya, and then you quote Zimbabwe. And yet in the previous page, you are also talking about Zimbabwe being an illustrative case to many African countries. Could you just explain that to me? It seems to be, the two statements seem to contradict each other. Thank you.
Honorable Fidel.
Thank you, Chair. On page 15 of your submission, you say, AZAPO wants the land to be returned to the workers and to peasants, the indigenous people whose forebears fought and died during and died fighting for its return. But somewhere you also say that the land should be returned to the state, and you prohibit foreign ownership. Now, if an investor from out of the country comes, but he says, unless I'm given ownership
of the land on which the development that I'm supporting with my finances is directed on land which I must be a co-owner, if not an exclusive owner. How would you say government should handle such? If a foreigner comes, would you say not at all, or what should happen? And lastly, Chair, your statement on page 26 that 70% of South African land is categorized as farms and it's not productive. Have you really done a research to that effect? Because my understanding is that what farmland we have in South Africa produces so much that we actually export, let alone the fact that we export while so many millions are suffering from food insecurity. I just want you to confirm if you, that is actually the case, that that is unproductive. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for the presentation. I just want to maybe get the position of clarity. The presenter indicated that with the reference to one asset class, there must be restrictions. I think indicated in the one case, two houses per person or something like that. I just want to know, with relation to the other three asset classes that's in the economy, does the presenter also believe that there should be restrictions or minimum that a member can own? I just want to get an indication. Is it only restricted to houses or land, or what about the other three asset classes? Thank you.
No, thanks. I actually wanted to ask about that, but mostly exploring the concept of land ceilings. Like this, we are seeing maximum of two houses. Like in terms of land, what do you think should be the land ceiling per person? In terms of what should be, because I think it's one of the issues that we should factor in when we finalize the report on the land ceiling, when we then redistribute after the expropriation of that compensation.
My questions, the first one is the one relating to words of dispossession, which you make mention of, fought by Khoshadi Ma Antatise and Khoshis Kukune and other queens and queens and kings. Now, what I would like to know is that in terms of, according to what ASAPO has written here, can I then infer that you are concerned about the cut-off date of 19 June 1930, as you keep on referring to this loss of possession? And then the second question is the usage interchangeably of the words repossession of land and expropriation of land. May you kindly, with your respect, sir, clarify this. Okay, thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair. President, you know, when this committee was formed, our mandate was look at Section 25 of the Constitution and recommend amendments if necessary. That's the mandate. Your submission is suggesting that we expand Section 25 in totality. And my understanding is that there's no replacement for it from reading your document. Are you therefore suggesting that the Constitution must be silent on land and property? Because that's the effect of your the effect of your recommendation is that the Constitution, the supreme law of the land, must be silent on land and property. Is that what you're suggesting, sir?
The first question deals with CPA. I was trying to struggle in my head what CPA is and that it is failing. But the fact that something has failed at a particular point in time does not mean that the right thing must not be done. It simply means that we have to educate our people so that they don't fail going forward. It is similar to a question that was raised earlier on to say, how do you take a matter as big as the land and allow it to be under the present state or government that has got so many questions around it and corruption. And then we say, no, no, this is not the ideal government we're talking about. But in principle, would like the land to reside in the hands of the state on behalf of the people who have mentioned, the landlessness, the poor, the workers, and the people who we can see every day with our own eyes. And during the period of the submissions, we saw how they were very, very emotional, because the bottom line is that they are having a rough time, and the issue of land is what actually part of the bigger problem they are facing. And I think it is going to number two, but the issue of Zimbabwe, you remember the Lancaster House Agreement and how the Mugabe government was cheated out of going to the negotiations and being promised that they will, in 20 years' time, they'll be given money to buy the land. But when it did not happen, the people rose up. But we are making a case for people who have been given land by the government, by the Parliament of Zimbabwe, to say it is something very good. But also saying it should not be given to friends. It should not be given to those who are politically connected. We're saying when it applies in this country, it should consider the people who are landless, the people who don't have settlement areas, the people who cannot mine. Because you have to be sensitive to those things. It cannot just wish it away and look the other way. So Zimbabwe has got a case where ordinary people have been given the land and the other people have not been given. You know, in another 20, 30, 40 years' time, when a young person in Zimbabwe, and Zimbabwe has solved its political problems, is doing well in farming, his counterpart in South Africa will ask him, where did you get the land? Say, it was given by my government. And who was your government at the time? And that is when the people are going to spit at those who are in the leadership during this time. So this is how Zimbabwe comes in that thing. I think that Filteni, in some ways, I've attended to that question of the state and the ordinary people who owns. And if a foreigner comes here and he says, I've got money in a bag and I'd like to get land, but that land must be given, gives the conditions you are giving, we must tell him to go back home and not entertain a person who will come into our country and want to dictate terms to us. We'll not be the only country who does that. If we're a proud nation, we should develop ourselves into being a proud nation. And as a proud nation, we should be able to stand tall and put conditions that are favorable to suit our people. The next question is 70% that have we researched on the food. And we gave you a figure of 70%. And what you're talking about could be 10%. We have made that research to say the issue that there is food and so on, it's blown over by those who want to say to you, look, we're doing this for you. And you say, no, 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 but you're only doing on the 10% and 15%, but you're not doing on the entire 70%. And the reason you're not doing that is because you're not involving everybody in the country on the issue of farming and land, because there is no way I can succeed as a country when it's me and my ilk and the rest of the people are just playing idle to the issue of food production and farming. And there's a question on the redistribution of, I think it's about Honorable Chibambo, that we mentioned issues of housing, that the housing should be, people should own two properties. You know, I spent time in Holland, and there's no land there. And there are people who are very wealthy who stays in apartments. And when they go to the field, they go to a field of 10 times 6. They put a fence around there, and they say, we're going to the land. And there's been, and there's nothing they can do, because that is what their constitution says, that you cannot get more than 10 by 6, whereas other people don't have anything. So we're saying in this country, we have to determine the size of the and the number of properties that you have to build our nation. We had not really done an exercise, you might help us, on what type of land we should. I come from a piece of plot, and it's not more than 20 hectares. But it's nice, it's comfortable, you can do so many things in it. So I don't have to have 200 hectares or 1,000 hectares where I don't even do anything about it, but it's just old and I feel good that I've got a farm and it is not productive. So we are saying, and we believe when we do so, Commissioner, we believe when we do so, some of the farm owners might actually come down to say, well, you're not taking everything. So if you're going to cut it and subdivide it, maybe it's okay. Remember, I'm not talking of a revolution. Revolution says repossession. Revolution says reconquer. Revolution says take everything, nationalize, and redistribute. But I'm saying for our country at the present moment to be able to function, let us try and cut to sizes such that each and every person is able to have a meal at the end of the day. I think there are one or two questions. Words of dispossession of the Queens. We are very much concerned, ma'am, about what people have fought for and they are not getting, if that is the question that you wanted me to answer. It is our big problem. Ah, the cut-off date. Yeah. For us, this cut-off date of 1913 and so on doesn't work. Our cut-off date, it's, if it's true that they came in 1652, on the 6th of April at 4 o'clock. It starts there. That's where it starts. To say, when you came, what did you do? And then we start moving from that premise. Issue of repossession and expropriation. We just accepted when Parliament came with appropriation. But that is not the term we use, because expropriation to us suggests that somebody has got something legitimately and we go and take from that person. So we are not entertaining issues of expropriation. What we are entertaining is the fact that we were dispossessed, we must repossess. But we're not insane. We can see when levels of people are and we want to move. So we are welcoming that expropriation. Maybe our kids will say it doesn't work. Let us do revolution and do repossession. And the final one, Comrade Smith, it's Section 25. I think there's a point somewhere where we are saying there are sections of that Section 25 on the public interest and that we are happy with. But we are not happy with, is it B, where it says we are not going to touch anything. Unfortunately, we are also making that case, that point here. We are also saying, can we exercise our mind as to how we can replace it or what can it be replaced with? Remember, we are coming from the position that we are not even happy with the little things that you are suggesting. But you are saying to accommodate everyone let us go through and say we support that Section 25 must be expunged so that we can open the way for land to be expropriated. I didn't think that it suggests that when we remove it, then it's a void. But if you want to do it, you have to think about it. We'll go back and make a written submission just on that aspect, if we can assist Parliament.
Thank you very much.
You are out of order. Honorable Godi, you are out of order. You are not allowed to participate. Before we break for lunch, colleagues, we are to have our last presentation now, which is from the State Vers Landbou A.N. Domse Beperk. Are they around? Okay. We break after the statement.
What am I doing?
No, we are breaking.
Oh, yes, thank you.
Is this on?
I almost broke a file.
Let's play now.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and members of committee members. I'd just like to introduce myself as a farmer. I do not own any land, neither does my family. I represent a company called State Vers Agriculture, which is one of the top five agri businesses in South Africa. We just want to air the views of agri businesses in respect of the proposed amendments to the Constitution. Just a little background on State Vers for those that do not know us. We are one of the larger agribusinesses in South Africa, employing approximately 1,700 people, of which the composition is probably 50-50 black and white, if that is the all-important chairperson. We are also 10% black-owned through our staff members, and that figure is growing as we implement our initiatives in terms of empowerment and employment equity. With the aforementioned in mind, the debate on land reform and specifically land expropriation without compensation is an important aspect to State Vers and other agribusinesses. Our submission is that the committee needs to engage on the economic and financial issues at stake in the proposed amendment of Section 25 of the Constitution. And our central argument would be that expropriation without compensation will not yield the desired outcomes, but in terms of land reform objectives, chairperson, nor the creation of an inclusive economy. Now, I must state that from an agribusiness side, we fully support land reform. We support land distribution. That's the right thing to do. We need to equate the imbalances of the past. But we don't believe that the amendment of Section 25 is necessary to do that. We feel that within the ambit of the law, the same objectives can be achieved without having the negative consequences of attacking the property rights of citizens in South Africa. Now, if you look at agriculture as a contributing industry to the economy, we must also consider the multiplier effect of agriculture. Now, the decline in the agriculture sector contribution to the GDP from 9.1% in 1960 to 2.6% in 2017 is by no means an indication that the sector makes a smaller contribution when compared to others to the contribution in the past. On the contrary, it's only an indication that over time the growth in other sectors were higher when compared to that of agriculture. This is mainly as a result of the increase in factor productivity on the back of technology developments in non-agricultural sectors. The misperception in terms of the contribution of agriculture is further exaggerated by only considering the direct contribution or the effect of primary agricultural production. The contribution of agriculture extends beyond primary production, chairperson, with agriculture serving as both an input supplier and the consumer of products produced in other sectors of the economy. This is referred to as the inter-industrial linkages with a multiplier effect. Multiplier analysis, and specifically the production value added and deployment multipliers, are commonly used methods to determine the extent
of inter-industrial linkages. Normally, the results from the multiple analysis are portrayed in terms of the direct, indirect, and induced effects. Just to use a few examples, if you look at agriculture, Chairperson, agriculture has a production multiple of 2.94, with an indirect and induced impacts accounting to 0.73 and 1.21 respectively. In other words, on average, 500,000 direct value and 280,000 indirect value is added for every 1 million rand worth of primary agricultural production in the sums. There's also an employment multiplier, Chairperson, in terms of the agri-industry. The labor multiplier provides an indication of each sector's contribution towards the creation of full-time employment opportunities and ultimately each sector's contribution towards distributing salaries and wages amongst various types of laborers, which in turn should impact positively on the elevation of poverty. In terms of agriculture, 29 full-time employment opportunities will be created for every 1 million worth of agricultural production. Of that 29 full-time employment opportunities, almost 18 will be in the agricultural sector directly, and 3 will be in input supplying sectors. The balance of 8 employment opportunities will be in the broader economy. And these employment opportunities, Chairperson, are found in the rural area where poverty is mostly present. So it's our submission that when we consider land reform, which we support, and consider any amendment to Section 25, that we need to also look at the economic impact and the value add that agriculture brings to the economy of South Africa. And that value adds not only the direct economic contribution to GDP, but also having considered the multiplier effects, the multiplier analysis of the industry. So, in terms of food supply, I just want to make one statement, that is that food security really is a phrase that we use so often. But food security, if you look at the definition of that, is really having reliable access to sufficient quantity of affordable, nutritious food. And I think the emphasis should be on affordability of food, not on having food, but affordable food and of sufficient nutritious elements. Now, this does not only imply food self-sufficiency, as often implied in political debates. In fact, South Africa's food self-sufficiency, based on 4 main food groupings, in other words, meat, bread, cereals, milk, cheese, etc., is on a gradual decline since the mid-1970s. Theoretically, lower self-sufficiency and import substitution could lead to higher food inflation, which is negative from the food security perspective. So what we're saying is, Jefferson, yes, it's all good and well that we distribute land, which we must do, but if we do that in such a form that it's too small, it's not economical units, that we only reduce people to self-sufficiency, that will not alleviate food security or the fear of food security. Because food security is having affordable, nutritious food in quantities. Not everybody can be a maize farmer. Not everybody can be a doctor or a lawyer, whatever it may be. But the whole economy must work together to supply the rest of the economy in a sector where there's no sufficient skill or whatever it may be for that sector. If you know what I mean. In terms of financiers, the question was regarding the banks, Chair. It is true that the banks are concerned about expropriation without compensation for obvious reasons. The banks are usually exposed to the tune, I think, of 160 billion rand to agri-finance, and there need to be some sort of a solution in terms of how the banks will be treated. Myself or ourselves, we finance farmers on an annual basis to the extent of 4.8 billion rand. And that money we receive as agent for the land bank, from the land bank. Because the reality is that production requires huge capital sums these days. It's 8,000, 9,000 per hectare to produce grain. And you can do the sums if you plant 1,000 hectares. Now the banks play a pivotal part in providing that finance. And without that finance, people will be left, regardless of color, people will be left without any finances to produce a single crop of maize. So if you disregard the interest of banks in the current land debate, they will probably be very reluctant to finance agricultural input in future, and that will only impose further threats to food security. Chairperson, we do make some recommendations at the end of our report, paragraph 6, conclusion recommendations. Our recommendation is if I could just sum it up, is that certainly there need to be land restitution, there need to be land reform, there need to be equitable basis in terms of which that is achieved. Whether the constitution is amended or not is not the biggest concern. It's really the manner in which the constitution is amended, chairperson. And our view is to affect property rights of people will probably have a negative effect on the economy, which will have a multiplier effect on other sectors which cannot be afforded. We suggest that the audit must be done so that we ensure or establish exactly how many land lies without being used productively. And I am the first one to admit that any farmer who has hundreds of thousands of hectares which is unused, that land should be expropriated, chairperson. But I think to tamper with productive commercial farming activities will be a dangerous situation for food security and will have a negative effect on the economy. Chairperson, that is our conclusion. I regard the paper as having been read, and I'm welcome to answer any questions if there are.
Thank you very much. It's Mr. Linden. That's good. That's great. Yes. Okay. Can I get questions? Honorable Mukwili, Honorable Mutapo, and Honorable Filtani, and lastly, Honorable Smith.
No, thank you very much, Chair. Thank you for the presentation. There is a rhetoric in terms of how formations of white farmers deals with the issue of expropriation or amendment of Section 25, that they support land reform, but they don't support expropriation of amendment of the Constitution. Now, I've got a few questions for you. Mr. What's your name again?
Linda.
Linda. Oh, Linda Nagal, Linda. Oh, Nikitaru Linda Ger. Kasakhana Saisu Linda Gilina Lava Lamusad. So I don't know whether I should address you as a he or she. Now, I want to check, when was your organization formed? And from when it was formed to today, it only has 10% of black people. That on its own tells you that and your organization is not even ready to transform itself from within. Because in terms of EE, percentage of both race and gender must be taken into cognizance, 60% in each and every sector. So it means you are not willing to transform if up to date you still have 10% of black people. And I want to check with you whether you support transformation. The reason why I'm posing this question is that why, if I assume you will say your answer will be yes, you support transformation, right? Now, if you support transformation, why is it so difficult that you don't want to transform the ownership pattern of the land? Because once you support transformation, it means you will take into cognizance the demographics of the country and make sure that those that are in majority occupy or access or own the majority of land. And by owning the majority of land, it will then translate into participating and owning the means of production, which is economy in its entirety. Now, I want to check with you that why, especially you white people, are so afraid that land transformation in South Africa must happen. And you are so afraid in such a way that you even invited, I'm not saying you as a vague verse, I'm referring to white people. You even invited Israelites to come and train you for war because of the issue
of
why is this
Chairperson, I'm tired of listening to this rubbish, with all due respect. We are supposed to ask...
We are going to listen to this rubbish until we own our land. This rubbish, you are going to listen to it. If you can't stomach it, you must take your bus and go. We don't need you. This rubbish affects us. It's rubbish because we don't want to run it. If you have stomach in this room, take your bus and go.
Do your job.
Honorable Mugwele.
Do your job.
Honorable Mugwele, please. No.
Person?
May I address you on a point of order? On a point of order.
Yes, sir. Chairperson, the committee is supposed to have procedures. This gentleman is the legal officer of a company whom we invited to come and address the committee. The rules say at this stage that we are supposed to ask questions to clarify. Now, for a member of parliament to confront a member about some people who called Israelites to come and train people is completely out of order. It's got nothing to do with the presentation. This is not an EFF rally, so please, rule that out of order.
Something to deal with access of land.
Willie, can you please limit yourself to clarity-seeking questions without making statements which seem
to be political? That is exactly clarity-seeking questions,
okay,
in terms of access of land and white people being able to transform the access of land. It is a very relevant question, Chair. This question is extremely relevant. It's extremely relevant, and I will request you, Chair, to rule against that racist white man. That we must never ever say, I'm speaking rubbish. I'm not representing you. I'm not representing you. Point of order, Chair, could you please stop doing your job? And that's what Chair is doing. I'm a daughter. You are a woman, and that's the Chairman's job.
You are not assisting the situation.
I am assisting it because you are not doing your job. Shame on you. Shame on you. Protecting white people. Shame on you. Listen to this crap. This woman is out of order. I've never ever said to me on the I'm not a crap. If you can't stand up this, take your bag. I'm not a crap for all those sake.
That's what you are saying. I didn't say that.
Members. Your point of order is sustained, sir. The next speaker, Honorable Mutapu.
Okay. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Honourable members, media, and the presenters. Good day, Mr. Van der Linde. Thank you, Chair. What I would like to know, apparently you are a private company. Immediately you say PTY is a proprietary limited, is a private company. You are a private company with head office in Northwest, Leo Dorenstadt. Founded in 1990, thank you for nodding.
Are you belonging to this St. West Pty Ltd, belonging to any agricultural union or association, such as agri? No, it's not irrelevant. I'm still proceeding. Huh? No, your court is whispering to you. Not a chairperson. Sometimes. No, I request you to chair, chairperson, please.
Ask the question. I'm chairing.
You are chairing, but the court has whispered to my ear.
He never whispered to my ear.
No, it's whispering. So, what I'm saying, I want to know if you are, because I'm to complete. There's nothing to me saying this question. I want to know as whether you are below St. West Pty Ltd, which is a private company registered in 1990. Is belonging to either Agri SA or Transvaal Agricultural Union, as they appeared before us to make a presentation, and I can see that the two presentations differ, the three materially. That's my first comment, Mr. Van der Linde, with your respect. And then the second one is, again, I can see that this St. West Pty, which is an agricultural having an interest in land-related issues, is also having interest in other sectors like property, which I think is also relevant for today. I've gone through your website and I've seen a lot of things happening there. And I would like to know, in terms of land reform, Mr. Van der Linde, through you, Chair, the relationship with the neighboring villages like Ramokoka Stad, Ramoropa, and Ting, in terms of the land reform program. Thank you, Chair.
Yes, I'm still around, Chair. Welcome and thanks very much for the presentation. Now, just three questions here. How has your company ever assisted the landless to also participate in the agricultural economy, which has got such a low contribution towards the country's GDP? And here I'm including the hundreds of employees that you told us are employed by your company. You've got so many employees, and you say towards the end that is under 3A. What South Africa needs is a need-driven empowerment and support system that includes a well-administered training and skill development program. Now, you probably expect that to be done by government, as you say. What I would like to know is whether your company has ever practiced what you suggest. Now, second ancillary question there too is, do any of your black employees have any piece of land of their own, while so that they can practice jobs that they can participate in the agricultural economy beyond just being employees? Lastly, Chair, you say that the budget for the land reform program, you know, as a whole, so to speak, is hampered, is limited by the fact that government also funds a number of social programs. Now there my question is, would you agree that those other programs which are funded by the government are necessarily, do need to be funded by government? In other words, it can't be a question of for government to say, okay, we will not do ABC like your old age pension so that we can have a bigger budget for agriculture. Would you say that those programs are needed or not? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Just 3 points. So the first one, The first one, you say that the slowness or lack of land reform is because of the issues that you raised, the lack of skills, corruption and all those things, which I agree with. We all agree with those things. The question that I'm asking you is, do you not think that the practice of willing buyer, willing seller had any role to play in this matter? That's the first question. Because you seem to discard that that was an impediment. And then secondly, sir, you know, we're hoping that you can assist us. You imply, and I don't think there's a fight about the implication or the implied message that Section 25 does not impede expropriation. But there are many people out there that say, make it explicit so that it's not challengeable at the court. If you guys go and make it very explicit that expropriation without compensation is but one of the tools, it helps not having this taken to court. What would you say to that? Because I don't think we must all move from the premise that we all have the same level of understanding or same level of education. Other people just don't see this implication. They want to sit in black and white. And then the final one, I don't know if I misheard you, sir. I thought I heard you saying that you get money from the land bank and then you take that money and you give that money to farmers, something like that, so that in some way you're a middleman between the land bank and farmers. Why do you have to be a middleman? Why does the land bank need a middleman? Why must you go and get money from the land bank and you give it to farmers, whoever they are, black, white, green or blue? Why doesn't the bank do that? Because you see, we're arguing that the bank must be transformed, the bank must become strengthened, and yet we've got middlemen like you doing the role of the land bank. And I'm not fighting with you, I'm saying if there are more than you, I'm trying to understand the purpose of a middleman when there is a land bank.
Point of order, Chair. Point of order. I don't think that last question from the Honourable Smith is relevant to what is happening here. It's got nothing to do with banks and whatever. You are supposed to look for clarity.
It's in the presentation, and he said so himself. He said so himself.
Let me deal with this situation, not you.
How many chairs have we got here? The chair should answer me, not other people.
Okay. The point of order is overruled. Have you finished with your... Okay, you are done. Mr. Linde, you can now respond, but let me make one thing clear to you. Neither you nor your organization's credentials are being questioned here. And neither the fact that maybe you might be a white man or what is being questioned. So you are here to present to Parliament as a South African on what you believe should be the way forward for South Africa. And we appreciate what you are presenting. So please just be settled and respond to what.
Thank you, Chairperson. It's not a concern to me. I'm very sensitive to the issues that we face in South Africa and from all classes. I appreciate them, all the responses. I'm going to try and remember all the questions, Chair. As far from a friend here from the EFF, she asked about the white farmers or how do we support transformation if our own organization is not transformed. That's a relevant question. In terms of our employment equity, Chairperson, I mentioned that we're probably 50-50 black and white. In terms of employment equity, the employment equity. In terms of shareholding, we're 10% black owned, and that number is growing as we implement initiatives.
I want you to go to that direction, because I want you to reflect on the issues of the question before us. Do we need to change the constitution in order to achieve expropriation without compensation, or vice versa?
I just want to mention this.
Yeah, but if you feel free to respond, just do that.
The big challenge with organizations such as us find head office in a place called Leeuwardenstad, where there's no restaurants to attract qualified black people that's willing to work there. It's a huge challenge. That's a huge challenge to attract people to say, come and work for us. We're sitting in dinner stuff. We've tried, and we're trying to attract executives. So if there's anybody interested, please contact me. But really, it's a difficult. It's difficult to attract people to stay in a town like Leidenstad, where we are head office. In terms of, we are a private company. We believe in land reform. We believe in transformation. And there are many hurdles in the way for a company such as us to transform. We have our employment equity targets, Chairperson, which we try to comply with. It's difficult for reasons I just mentioned. But we certainly believe in that, and we are a PTY Limited. We are a private company for various reasons. There's no need to be a listed company or a public company. It's just more compliance, if that answers the question. I want to get to the more relevant questions, Chairperson, in terms of, let me just make my notes here, see my notes. The question from the member there in terms of how many of our employees own land, I'm not sure how many own land. I think probably nobody. Neither do I own land. I'm not sure. Most of our employees do not own land. Land has become so expensive for normal salaried workers to acquire land to put the necessary infrastructure on that land and farm has become impossible, Chairperson. It's probably going to take generations to, if you buy farm now, to turn it into a productive, not a productive, but to get your money back, your capital back over a period of time. I wish I could go to the bank.
Willie, can you please give the gentleman a chance to...
I will need a while for learn for a fourth Chairperson. In terms of budgets and what we do, there's a lot of initiatives that we do, as normal companies does, Chairperson, in terms of upliftment of people in the community. Hakala is the chance that they still need to start. We support the quash, we support the sport, we support all facets of the town. So I don't know whether that was a question.
I think he did not quite understand my question. My question was, you state in your submission that one of the reasons why the land reform program is not a success is because of the lean budget allocation, and you admit that some of government money goes to social programs. Now my question was, would you agree that those programs are necessary for government to fund? That was my question.
Thank you, Chair. Chairperson, yes. I think most of the programs are necessary. I think if they're implemented effectively and there's less wasteful and fruitless expenditure in government and state departments, I think that the notion of the programs is important. They shouldn't be done away with. I think that if you look at the land reform budget, I think there were years where it didn't spend all the money that was allocated, and that money could have been appropriated for land reform. In terms, let me just get to the next question, Chairperson. In terms of the land bank, Chairperson, I can't answer as to the strategy of the land bank. The reality is that we are a conduit to some extent, a limited conduit to develop and fund farmers. And slow farmers doesn't have a color. The reality is that mostly white farmers currently, because most of your commercial farmers currently are white. But we have also proposed to the land bank a development finance program, which I know the land bank is looking at. But as to their strategy and how they implement their role, that answer, unfortunately, I can't answer.
Thank you very much, Mr. Linde, for your visit. No, there's no follow-up. No follow-up. Okay. In the... cannot allow any...
No, he must just tell us transformation in terms of... He's not going to respond. Why are you protecting him?
I'm not protecting him, I'm protecting my time.
Okay.
Mr. Linde, thank you very much. I'm the one who's keeping time. He will definitely do that. Colleagues, there is this thing here that we are supposed to be breaking for lunch. I mean, not for lunch, but for a short break. I want to indulge us on this one, because we need to be moving quite fast before the house seats at 2 o'clock. Okay, can you allow me to continue with the presentations? Yes, okay. so that those who move out can just move out whilst the program is still running. Can I check? Is Mr. Numalo here? Is Mr. Numalo around? Who else is here? Mr. Kani? Okay. Mr. Kani, let's give the time to you for your presentation. Mr. Kani. He's captured as Mr. Kani. Remember we took individuals and can I put it on record that Mr. Numalo is not here? Okay.
In terms of the program, Mr. Numalo, where is he? He's supposed to present at 5:12. Maybe he's looking at his time. So
okay.
let us
no.
5:01 rather. Let us not.
Let's not rule that.
Rule that
here.
Out.
Yeah.
Sure.
But because Mr. Kani is here, let him continue.
Yes.
Mr. Kani, and members, can I appeal once more? Can I just, Mr. Kani, I'm not talking about you. Can I make this appeal, members? If presenters are presenting something that you are not comfortable with, let it not be an issue. We are here to listen to presentations, whether we like them or we don't like them. That we like them or we don't like them is neither here nor there. And can we stop this attack on presenters so that we focus on issues, ask questions for clarity, and nothing less, nothing more. Mr. Gandhi, the stage is
yours. Thank you, Chairperson, and honorable members, fellow presenters. Chairperson, I did submit a written presentation, I think on the 28th of May. I hope that is a document you may be having in front of you. But this one is a summary of that presentation to fit into 10 minutes. I did introduce myself. I'm presenting here as a fellow citizen who is concerned about the state of land reform in the country. I did mention my background, particularly the fact that I come from the Eastern Cape, where we did our part for almost 100 years to try and prevent the land disposition. We failed like everybody else. Chairperson, from the outset, I must state that I believe that in order for us to be able to resolve the questions that is before us, we need a proper diagnosis of the problem. The question before the committee is crafted in such a way that we have taken a position that the Constitution in the current form is a problem, and therefore is there a possibility that it must be amended so that it can allow expropriation without compensation. And I think the biggest problem we have in the country is the fact that after almost a quarter of a century, we are sitting with a situation where we still have black people almost excluded in land ownership. If you look at the current land ownership pattern, that one we know. I'm not going to spend much time as what happened in 1652, before which land belonged to the indigenous people, what happened in 2013, and also in 1953. But if one looks at the Constitution, Section 25, subsection 2, we state categorically that property may be expropriated only in terms of the law of general application. I think from the point of view of my background as a lawyer and a security expert, I tend to be evidence-based in what I'm presenting. Property may be probated in terms of the law's general application. And this is what needs to happen in order for us to be able to expropriate property. I'm aware, for example, that Public Works is busy with a bill that seeks to do this. I'm not sure whether they are amending the current one or they are proposing a particularly new bill, but this is what needs to happen in order for us to be able to expropriate property. I'm not going to dwell in terms of the sub-paragraphs where it says expropriation must be for public purpose and in the public interest and subject to compensation, the manner of which and time must be agreed by the parties concerned or by the court. Also, subsection 3 of the Constitution seeks both sections, subsection 2 and 3, in my own view, were basically meant to achieve the issue of expropriation of property, which is something that I'm going to deal with later on, whether that has happened or has not happened in terms of how the government is dealing with the issue at the present moment. Coming to the law of general application, at the present moment we have Expropriation Act 63 of 1975. Obviously it is an old act, it may need to be amended, but that is the law that is helping us to appropriate land at the present moment. And the municipalities are using this act very effectively where they have to appropriate land for whatever public purpose. I just want to quote Section 2, Subsection 1, which says that the obligation to pay compensation is a condition of expropriation but not a prerequisite for its operation, which means that compensation is not even a primary consideration. It's something that has to happen after the decision has been taken or if a public interest has been identified. That is the primary consideration. Compensation is something that comes later, and then it must be subject to certain conditions. If you look at my presentation, I have referred the committee to decided cases. I'm not going to dwell much on them, but I'll quickly go to a matter of Harvey versus Umhlathuze Municipality, 2008 case, where the court said the right to appropriate granted under statute, for example, Expropriation Act 62 of 1975, empowers the expropriator to expropriate the property for public purpose against payment of compensation. But you must take into account Section 2, Subsection 1 of the said Act. Another case, which is a constitutional court case, Arun Property Development versus City of Cape Town. The land was expropriated under an ordinance, which is also a law of general application. The court said the object to take away property without compensation should not be imputed to the legislature unless it is expressed in clear terms that the justification for the provisions lies not in the payment of compensation, but for the people for which property is expropriated. This suggests that a law can actually state that you can expropriate property without paying compensation. This is a constitutional court that says that this is not imputed in any law unless it is expressly stated. So you can have an expropriation law that states that you can expropriate property without compensation in certain circumstances. For me, the most important case is the one of 2011, which is the constitutional court decision, Hafeji and others versus the Tegwini Municipality, where the court says the provisions of Section 25(2)(b) do not require that amount of compensation and the time and manner of payment must always be determined by agreement or by the court before expropriation under Section 25(2). This is very important because some people have said that you need to agree first for expropriation to take place before you can expropriate. The constitutional court says that is not necessarily the case, but you can agree after the fact to pay compensation. And it says it's not also necessary that the court must be the one that agrees when there's a dispute, which I think some have been listening to presentations, but some people have been saying this, that if there's a probation, always the court must be the one that actually gives the people the authority to go ahead. In my conclusion, Chairperson, according to me, the narrative that says land reforms failed because of the shortcoming of the Constitution, I think is misleading to some extent. The administrations that followed from 1994 up to the present, they've been using the willing buyer, willing seller principles, which principle is not based on any law, not in the Constitution, not in any act. And if we have been doing that for all along, on what basis are we saying now that it is a problem of the Constitution, when the Constitution allows us to expropriate property, and we chose, for whatever reason, not to follow that route of expropriation? And Jefferson, this is a fact. We have never attempted to expropriate land in South Africa in the current 1994 to present dispensation. We have used this willing buyer, willing seller principle. Even if you look at the restitution program, we started after 1913. We said that you cannot claim land earlier than 1913, when at the time we already have only 13% of the land available to black people. So this was a democratically elected government that was doing this type of thing. So in my view, it is an gross incompetence and lack of political will that resulted in the spectacular failure of land reform that we have witnessed so far. I do not deem it prudent, Chairperson, to amend the Constitution because of the reason I've said. If after this process, the majority says there must be amendment, I guess this is what is going to happen. But we cannot say, as a matter of fact, that we are where we are because of the Constitution, but because we did not follow the Constitution. For the reason, maybe some people will tell us in future, why did they not follow the route of expropriation? Because the problem is not to expropriate without compensation. The problem is that we need to expropriate in order to make land available so that it can be redistributed to the majority of the previously disadvantaged majority of the people. I've made a few recommendations, Chairperson. Firstly, that with immediate effect, we must relinquish the willing buyer, willing seller principle and replace it with the land expropriation using the relevant sections of the Constitution, which according to me is Section 25.2 A and B and Section 25.3. Other subsections deal with other things, but the two subsections I've quoted, I think they will help us in terms of achieving what we want to achieve. And I also think that the Expropriation Act of 1975 is an old act, and it may not necessarily deal with the problems that are relevant at this time. It needs to be amended. I'm not sure whether the public works are trying to do that, but you need a policy, you need a law of general application in order to expropriate property. This is what the Constitution says, and it's not going to change. If you do not amend that part of the Constitution, then because the Constitution is not going to be a policy, it guides the formulation of a policy. That's why they say you must have a law of general application. The one that is current is Section 65, Act 65 of 1975. among other things, I think the amendment must... I'm concluded, Chairperson.
Unfortunately, your time is against you. Thank you so much. You only had 10 minutes. Yes. Members, Honorable Mutapo, Honorable Dudley. No, sorry. sorry. It's Lodrich. And then Lodrich, Julie Mutapo, Lodrich, Kiltani. Honorable Melder Mukwele and Honorable Smith.
In that order.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Mine is just a...
Sorry, Honorable.
Okay. Good day, Mr. Ghani. Paragraph, if you look at paragraph 27 of your submission and 30, they are a bit confusing, especially in relation, in paragraph 27, you are clearly saying yes, amend. Then in paragraph 30, you are saying something different, and you keep on referring to Havaji versus Etekwini municipality case. May you kindly clarify us in that regard. Thank you, Chair.
Who's next? Honorable Rodriguez.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mr. Carney, also thank you for your presentation. Mine also refers to paragraph 27, where you state that if you want to expropriate with compensation, section 25 must be amended. But now you also cite certain cases. But the fact is that, or let me rather rephrase, so what is your view? Because at this point, section 25, in terms of expropriation without compensation, has not really been tested. So what is your view that, because you make a very bold statement that if you want to expropriate with compensation, then the Constitution has to be amended, whereas we don't know for certain yet that that will stand or that will be the case in law, in a court case.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Often very interesting when a legal argument is brought up in this matter. Now, I'll move from the premise that subsection 1 of section 25 is the one that persuades government to go into negotiations. And the process that government chose is the one called, so-called, willing buyer, willing seller. Now, then when there is disagreement, then on those negotiations of at what price do you want to buy my property, then when there's disagreement, then courts come in. At the moment, there's a shortage of judges for the land courts, and that's where we are at the moment. Now, which other method would government assist the landlords to acquire land when we get locked up in that process, which has drained state coffers already with what little has been paid? We're talking tens of billions already, and the people remain landless. Which other process besides expropriating without compensation? Secondly, Chair, just to remind you that the 1975 piece of legislation has been found to be unconstitutional. I will not go into the reasons for that. I happen to be serving in the Portfolio Committee for Public Works. So in the last 2 years, we deliberated on the proposed amendments thereto, Expropriation Act. But currently, Parliament has parked that process in order to give this current process space to proceed with the thought of expropriating with amending the Constitution, so to speak. Now, the purpose of this whole exercise is to enable people to legally have access to land. So if we don't expropriate, if government does not expropriate without compensation, because the suggestions that you have made at the end of your presentation or towards the end are all for compensation, which other method would you suggest government, you know, puts in place in order for the landlords to have land of their own? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would like to thank Mr. Carney for an eloquent presentation. In paragraph 29, you make the point that the question we should ask is not necessarily about the amendment of the Constitution, but how do we get transformation with regard to land ownership? And I think that's the kind of theme that we've heard quite throughout the process. However, in paragraph 2, you refer to yourself and you say you are farming on a small communal land, and then you go back to the last paragraph. On page 8, paragraph F, you say the problem is that the state does not transfer ownership of the land
to the owners or the beneficiaries of that process. What would your position be with regard to communal land under the control of traditional leaders? How should that be handled? And with regard to the giving of ownership, what is your point of view in that regard, please?
No, thanks, Chair. Thank you very much, Mr. Kani, for the presentation. And that you, in your legal mind, you have referred to us to a piece of legislation that has been deemed to be unconstitutional. But anyway, we will have to engage you on that. My question, Mr. Kani, is that this Expropriation Act of 1975 that you have referred us to provide for expropriation in the public, does not provide for the expropriation in the public interest. It considers compensation through market value only. So how do you then reconcile the requirements that are there in the Constitution that compensation must take into account numerous matters being historic disadvantage and property itself? How do you then have to reconcile the two legislations? Thank you very much.
Thanks, Comrade Chair. I think I want to follow on what Honorable Lutwich said. On your Chapter 27, you say that if the government wants to expropriate land without compensation, Section 25 must be amended. That's what you are saying. Now, many people that have come before you have said Section 25 in its current form allows for expropriation without compensation. That's what they said. You are saying it doesn't. That's why you're saying we must amend it. So that's the first thing that I want you to clarify. Others say, why amend it? Because it allows for expropriation. You are making it very clear that unless you amend it, you can't expropriate. So help us understand which argument is relevant. And then secondly, you asked the question about or you made the suggestion that maybe the legislation needs to be amended. Just for your information, there is the amendment of that expropriation bill that is ongoing by Public Works now. But there's an argument that is being made that says, you see, if you look at Section 25, sub 3, it talks about, it includes market value and all those type of things. When you want to expropriate and with this compensation, you must include all these things, current use of property, the market value, and so on. Would it harm us if we change the Constitution to say compensation of zero value should also be a consideration? Or are you saying that it shouldn't come in the Constitution, it must come in the legislation? I'm just asking the question. If in the Constitution you are putting market value in the Constitution, why can't we also put in the Constitution that zero value is also fine? I hope you understand my question. So those are the three. Thanks, Chair.
Mr.
Gordon?
I think Ms. Mutabo, Mr. Smith, and Mutabo, Mr. Smith, I think Ms. Lodrich. Exactly as I've said, this is my view in the current form. If you want to expropriate without compensation, you have to amend the Constitution because it's not provided for explicitly that you can expropriate property without compensation. All what the Constitution says is that if you want to expropriate, do so using a law of general application. So it's still my view that is a correct position if you want, if this is what you want to expropriate, it's not my argument, but if, because in government, when this argument happened of expropriation, some ministers were even saying that it's there in the constitution, and they even wanted to do a test case for that. It's not there. That is my view and my interpretation of the constitution. And therefore, if you want the constitution to be explicit, then you must go and amend it, because it's not there at the present moment. What the constitution says, it gives you a list of things that you can look at, and you may even find a situation where you can expropriate without actually paying compensation if you take those into account as they have been listed in the constitution. So that is the issue of section, what I said in my submission in paragraph 27. Mr. Fildane is saying that the issue of willing seller and willing buyer is embedded in the Constitution, Section 25, Subsection 1. It is not there.
No. Yes, please. I said, Chair, it becomes an unavoidable consequence. If you are avoiding violating Subsection 1, then you go to negotiations, because Subsection 1 prohibits arbitrary, you know, expropriation of property. And that's what persuades government to then say, okay, let's negotiate. What price? Thank you.
Okay, and I think the government is wrong in saying that, because the Constitution does not say go and negotiate. It says you must implement the law of general application in order to have a process. That's why they speak about the term of arbitrariness of expropriation. If it's arbitrary, then there's no process, then we cannot do it. Because it does not say you must go to and negotiate for, or you must not do expropriation. It says you must follow a particular process. As long as the process, then you may expropriate. I think, again, there was an issue about Section Act of 1975 being found unconstitutional. It may be that there was an advice from somewhere that says this act is unconstitutional. I've quoted the cases purposefully. Two of them, they are constitutional court cases. They endorse this act. So there's never been a court that says Act 63 of 1975 is unconstitutional. All I'm saying, I just hope that the public works, it will amend this constitution, or it will do away with it, I mean this act, completely. But there's no decision of a court, whether it's the High Court or Constitutional Court. In fact, the two decisions of the Constitutional Court, they endorse this act. So if there was an advice to Parliament or to someone that says this act is unconstitutional, I will disagree based on the fact that the High Court on the land has actually ruled on the matter. Mr. Melder, if I'm not mistaken.
No, but answer another question.
Through you, I quoted that it's unconstitutional, but because your presentation is based on it, then I asked you, what is the reconciliation of market value vis-a-vis public interest in terms of the constitution?
I think Mr. Fildane also has alluded to something similar on the issue. I don't know which else was, but if okay. I think that the public interest overrides, because I think the constitutional makers were aware of this fact that the land issue is going to come back to haunt us. That's why they put a public interest as part of the requirement of expropriation of land. So the market value by itself cannot just stand alone, that because my land is this and therefore you take a market value. Let me take an example. If I invade land and build a shack, and the municipality, after that some time, they start putting services. If whatever reason there's a public interest, they want to expropriate that land, they cannot take the total value of the land, because I did not pay for the land.
they can take into account the fact that I put a structure that was worth X amount of money, then I can pay only that amount of money. So that's how the issue of market value comes into play. You cannot buy, if the land was not acquired appropriately, you cannot look into the totality of the market value. You can look only on the improvements on the land and then take that. What about the communal property in terms of ownership? In the first place, I don't think that for me, the issue of communal land is part of the certain land, small amount of land that is already in the hands of black people under the chief. Obviously, the people sitting in these places, they need some protection of the tenure of the land for them to be able to work the land. Whether it is a title deed, whether it is a long-term lease, is something that can be worked into, but it's not the type of land that you can say it must be expropriated because it's already part of the small amount of land that is there. But you need to protect those who work that land in terms of whether it's a title deed or is a lease, anything that protects the right of a person to be in the land and to work on it. Spoke about the public interest. Would it harm if we in the Constitution, we state emphatically that expropriate without constitution to all I'm saying is that since we have not expropriated as a policy, we cannot come back and accuse the constitution of not assisting us. Like I said in my paragraph 27, if you feel that you need to have this, go ahead and have it. But the fact of the matter, as things stand, we have never attempted to expropriate land, and therefore the constitution is not the problem that we think it is in terms of enabling land to be appropriated so that it can be made available to those who are dispossessed in terms of the colonialism and apartheid and all of these problems.
Yes, you answered us, Mr. Khan. Thank you very much for how you interacted with us. And that will be all for today. Thank you very much, Mr. Khan.
Can I check? The rest of my recommendations are in my submission. I think
yes,
one
sir.
Of the members have them.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
It appears Mr. Numalo will not be able to make it today. He has so indicated. Now, the next presenter will be Women on Farms. That's what I said earlier on, that the members can just, grab and come back. I'll sleep on. Women in the Farms, are you here?
They
are at the farms.
Chairperson?
It's
the same like the previous situation. The program indicates they should be here 2:05.
So or it
could
be
that they are somewhere else at the moment. We don't know.
Okay.
Chairperson?
Yeah.
I know we are pressed for time, but shouldn't we perhaps adjourn and start again at 2:00?
Let's adjourn and then start at what?
2:00.
What time is it now?
It's 1:25.
Let's start at 2:15, please. Let's adjourn and start at 2:15.
Also that's
Oh.